the reason I called you is because I'm trying to do some research on PMAs, because somebody else just came out and said that your family can be a PMA.
I know, you were talking about the other day. Well, I suppose your family could be a PMA if you have people of at least common law maturity agreeing on a real contract under private contract to each other to form a PMA. So I guess in that sense you could.
Yeah, but like what happens when the PMA goes out and does business in the public?
Well, they're not supposed to do business in public. That's the whole idea. The whole idea of a PMA is that you don't do business in public. The only way you can do business is if the public joins as a member of the PMA.
Okay, so if you're a family PMA, then everybody else that you do business with has to join your PMA.
Correct. I've seen doctors and nutritionists, even Moffitt had to do this, and it worked well for him. Sets up a PMA, and basically every person that comes in there, he can't treat them. He's got to sign out. He doesn't treat the public whatsoever. It's a private member association for health purposes only. You must become a member to be treated, to have services or to be looked at or whatever. Rewards, I forget how it's worded now. And they go in, they pay $10 a year, and basically now that's a private contract, and that's it. No licensing required, nothing.
And do they pay per visit afterwards once they're a member?
Yeah, they do. They pay for the $10 is just the right to be a member and to have access, basically. After that, they pay like they would have paid before. Actually, it's cheaper than
right.
People.
So every person that they do business with, every other individual they do business with, has to be a member of the PMA?
Yes, sir. Yep, they do. They got to.
Otherwise, they're operating it illegally.
Otherwise, they're operating illegally. They're dealing with the public. They have no right to deal with the public, and the system will crash them, and I don't blame them.
So what I'm seeing with this is that most people are using it as a unverified trust. They're trying to say they can do it with their family, but just like a trust, that doesn't create an arm's length transaction, therefore it's an alter ego.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what they're trying to do. When you said trying to do it with their family, after the PMA is set up, what is the purpose of that PMA? I mean, the part of the PMA that Moffitt has is for the purpose of health.
Some of them are using the PMA to go get jobs at, like, casinos and stuff.
Oh, that's wrong, because now you're interfacing with the public, and once a casino is a member of the PMA or forms an umbrella PMA that you both belong to, now you're dealing with the public. They're going to get slammed.
Well, first and foremost, the judges have judicial discretion over this anyway. And so every time I'm looking up a lawsuit on this, I'm finding big organizations. I'm not finding some little family nonsense. I'm finding like the Boy Scouts. I mean, I'm finding big organizations that are private membership associations or private organizations or whatever term they want to use.
It was set up that way originally. I don't think it is. It became a full 501 type entity many, many, many years ago.
But yeah, I know. I'm just saying, but I'm looking at case law, and I'm not finding anything that relates.
Okay, well, again, it's just, you're right. It's an alter ego and the way they're using it. You know, an alter ego can be by design, and it can be by function, how it's used.
The bottom line of it is that none of these people are doing anything in accordance with the law of nations that's going to give them immunity. And without immunity, you're still subject to the jurisdiction that you're found in. And then the jurisdiction they're found in here says that prosecutors are immune from prosecution for knowingly charging an innocent person for a crime that never occurred. And they're also immune from conspiring with judges to determine the outcome of judicial proceedings in advance.
I know, amazing. That always gets me, I'll tell you.
So I want to know where people's freedoms are. And the answer is, I've tested this system every way I could, and there ain't none. Because this is, and it's like people are just looking for the way to skate by, hoping that they won't do it. They're trying
right,
to say
right.
They can't, and the answer is yes, they can.
They can.
Even as an ambassador, a dignitary, you could be arrested, or you could be stopped and detained. Until, if an officer deems, let's just say that somebody has said in a parking lot there's a car with a bomb in it.
Okay.
Let's just say it belongs to an ambassador. For the public safety, they're still going to search that car, even though the property of the ambassador is inviolable.
Right.
And they're going to search him just to make sure that somebody didn't drop something in his pocket and he explodes. Because they have to protect him as well. It's like people don't think about things, Gary. Now, they actually did that when they went into Afghanistan and they arrested an ambassador and they held him for 4 hours until they verified his identity. The military did that. And then as soon as they verified his identity, America apologized to the Afghani government for taking their ambassador.
That's fair. They weren't doing it just to harass. They had a legitimate security reason for doing it.
Right.
So I would be upset if it was me on the other side. But the reality is, they have a, you know, there has to be rules like that. There's got to be reason involved.
The program, though, that I see running that nobody wants to get is that everybody ends up guilty. They're building in 9-to-1 debt-based economies, every single country. So everybody's guilty under the doctrine of e pluribus unum, and the federated state is viewed as a sole person. And that's in the Law of Nations, too, in book number 2. Then, and the reason I'm saying that is because these people are claiming that they ratified the Law of Nations in their new little The United States of America 1781 nonsense.
And they ratified it how? By just referring to it?
Yeah, like the U.S. did in the Constitution. That's the only way you would ratify is just mentioning it, right?
Right.
Well, otherwise, I mean, there's nothing to ratify. It's a book that was printed in 1750 by somewhere around there by Battelle. And the precursors to that were Wolfe and Hobbes and Pufendorf and the rest, right?
You know, it was, I forget the guy, Arminius originally. I think it was Arminius, or Grotius, Hugo Grotius.
Yeah, him too. But now it was mentioned as far back as Livy's History of Rome.
Well, no, you're right. Remember, I was reading that old history. I wonder what happened to that book. I carry it with me everywhere. I can't figure out what happened to it. I remember I was going back all the way to ancient Samaria and also to Rome and trying to see the development of the international law. It was, you know, it's customs and usages and how people finally realized as groups get more powerful and wars get more deadly, and then they start saying, well, maybe there's a way we can get along. We can create some sort of agreement or whatever. And then certain rules, since that's how commercial law developed originally too, was just basic customs and usages to find that people agreed on a commercial code or an international commercial code. But in international law, even then, you have how people have acted over, you know, decades, centuries, and it builds up. And
well,
they ratify by their actions.
The operative mechanism today, and you can read it in UN Resolution 3166 and a bunch of other ones, is that the progressive development of the codification of international law, which is being done by the International Law Commission, which was established in the UN in 1947, and that is to take all this customary international law, get it into black ink on white paper, and then codify the thing. And I believe in that. I believe that it should be in black ink on white paper and codify, because people have never done anything but argue about what customary is.
Yeah, you're right. That's the whole idea of a code. Exactly right.
So,
or you have decisions, and you read all these decisions instead for stare decisis and try to figure out what interpret the law that way.
Well, the other thing about it is, what did he say? He said, because of the United States being the way it is, and he said, why is it they never pass any legislation based on the Law of Nations? And I'm sitting here going, the first thing you just brought up was the Naturalization Act.
What do you think that is, exactly?
I mean, the stupidity of this, Gary, and it, you know, I'm at a point where I'm just frustrated with it. I'm frustrated.
Why is it even concerning you? Are people that were talking about the Dom now going there instead? And why are you concerned with this?
No, because we're coming out with the education again, but you can't get people to tell the truth. You can't get people to tell the truth, and you have all these followers of this stuff. I've said it for years. I'm sick and tired of watching good people go to prison. I've seen it for a long time.
Why are they so easily getting all these followers? How come all these weird groups with these distorted
It has to do with neuro-linguistic programming, Gary. They want to do what they're comfortable with. They've been told all their life religiously that they're Americans and they believe in it as their God. And if people don't believe they believe in it as their God, you can go watch that red button thing that Catherine Austin Fitz did.
Now you told me about it.
Yeah. The point was, okay, understand, we'll take all the laundered money out of society, but you lose everything. Wall Street crashes, your pensions go away, your government checks go away, or whatever, but you no longer have any more drugs in your society, no more drugs in your community, no more drugs at the state level, no more drugs at the federal level, and now your kids aren't having to suffer with damage from drugs. So how many people are going to push the button? Only 1 out of 100 volunteered.
Really? Wow.
Only 1 in 100 volunteered, and I got news for you. Even they wouldn't do it if they actually got their hand to the button. And then the other thing that, because they just wouldn't.
I don't understand it.
I've already seen what the numbers are for even exercising self-determination. It's more like something than 1 in 100,000.
Yeah, I can say that's a little bit different in that regard, because people don't know how to make the jump. You can conceptually make the jump, you can legally make the jump, but it's the functional level of making the jump that people have trouble with.
Well, if you go back to ancient times, the way that it was done was just move away. Because if you wanted to get out from a tyranny, you just moved away.
Well, here's what I think is probably going to happen, Dave, and that's why it behooves you to have everything set up and extra copies and a safe and fireproof and everything else. I think we're going to be in some civil war. In fact, I'm being told that they're preparing for it. Well, when people blame the elite, and you know where I came from, you're always correcting me. But really, when you blame anybody, you're admitting that person has control over you and power over you. And so you can either then you recognize you're either a slave to that person, or you look for a way to, you know, basically extricate yourself from that situation.
Well, blaming someone else is just the human
condition. Yeah, it is.
Well, it's the human condition, but it's also the human catch-all for not taking responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're in it, and even if it's somebody else's fault, the answer is get out of it. But
right.
If it's your own fault, which it is, that's the reality. It's not holding anybody back anymore. They kick the door of self-determination wide open.
If the system falls apart, either through civil war or whatever you want to call it, the point is societies will self-organize again. And it's almost like the postmen. Remember the postmen? They looked there, they want to self-organize again, but back into the United States again, remember? They want to go back to the U.S. Republic and the California Republic.
Yeah.
But the reality is you could self-organize under the principle of international law then, and you basically form your compact at that point. Now, if they choose later to join something else, that's their business, but... You've got to have everything set up. I think we're coming through some anarchist-type situations over the next several years.
Well, here's the thing about America. I can't find any document or anything related to any war, anything that they've ever done. I'm looking at all of this stuff. I'm looking at the story that was sold to us, and then I'm going back and looking at the document, and looking at the story that was sold to us, and going back and looking at the document. I can't find anything that has truth. I can't find anything that doesn't have a bunch of lies mixed in with what they want to call the truth.
Now, do you think that's done intentionally, or do you think it's done out of laziness? I'm amazed at how many documents I see that I've seen elsewhere that people just cut and paste and add things, and they, you know, massage a little bit. I just wonder if that's people just don't do any real research anymore. They just copy other people's ideas, and they never verify if it's right or not.
Well, it's like this Keith Livingway with the 1781 group. He went into that Naturalization Act, and he read it like a Baptist preacher reads the Bible. Just read this little section of a half verse, and then do 30-minute sermon on it.
Mm-hmm. It's true. It sounds like they've got a religious understanding of the whole thing. It's organic, spiritual, whatever you want to call it. Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's all wrong. I mean, he's sitting there saying that a document that was written for aliens applies to him. I mean, if I was a judge and somebody called and said, hey, we got two idiots down here trying to take an oath, it's like, are they aliens? No, we don't think so. Well, ask them if they're aliens. Because if they're aliens, I'm calling the FBI and having them deported.
Yeah. They wanted to disavow their U.S. citizenship. There's even a path method that has to be done as well.
I mean, this goes back to, again, to try to claim that the United States government is not legitimate. And here's the thing about that, Gary. The propaganda machine is out there, but the underlying government still operates in accordance with international law. The other nation states have no right to interfere with the internal affairs. So the internal affairs, like with the IRS, we did 26 FOIAs apiece to get all of our records, and then we decoded them.
Okay.
Every record with the IRS is fraud. It's false.
Yeah.
But they want to claim, this guy's claiming that there's no actual contract and you don't actually owe the taxes. And this has to do with Title 27, Title 26 argument and all that kind of stuff.
Right, I've heard of that, yeah.
Do you remember the Armand Kondo letter that was written by Mercier?
Yes, I love the contract. Yeah, I do remember.
Yeah, that's when I learned that the contract with the IRS is you having a contract with a private business, the bank, and the authority they get is you ratified the contract.
What was it? What was it? That Dr. Creation guy that went to jail in Florida, opened. He would brag. It's so funny. I didn't ever do this. He actually got turned in by a Christian college that he worked with.
Well, he was using a lot of UCC redemption stuff, but the other thing he was doing was trust, and they were all moving money, $95, $96, $9,700 at a time. They were convicted for violating the spirit of the law, not the letter of the law.
Interesting.
Because they were trying to circumvent the $10,000 reporting issue.
Right. We call it structuring. Yeah, I call that structuring, I think.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. I got to take my grandchildren back. So, okay. Listen,
I want to send you one document on the PMA. You know what I really want to find out? I want to find out the IRS's viewpoint on these PMAs.
Well, let's look at the situation with Moffitt. He has a PMA. It's formed. It's filed with the state and everything. He still pays his taxes. And every, you know, all the other people pay their taxes. It's got nothing to do with taxes. It has to do with being able to have your private group and work within that group. But money he charges them, he's still paying with the U.S. dollars using a bank account. They're paying taxes on it. They're filing taxes.
Well, there you go. So the PMA is worthless.
No, it isn't. It's not, no, it's not worthless in terms
of... Okay, it's worthless for what they're trying to accomplish.
For what those people, but not for what the nutritionists and health people that just couldn't practice the way they wanted to because you can't do this as a doctor. You can't do this as a chiropractor. They say you can't say cure. So what they do is they extricate themselves from the licensing, form the private membership association, only treat members, and that's how they do it. So they're outside the system, but not for tax purposes, unless they, I guess they could be. I suppose if you could pay with gold back and forth, and maybe.
It doesn't matter. Any income in the United States is anything of value, especially under the Patriot Act.
All right.
It actually, the Patriot Act uses the word precious. If it's considered precious.
My precious, yes.
There you go, just like the Lord of the Rings.
Golem, wasn't his name or something?
Yeah, Golem. Okay, now I have one more question about that then. Does the association itself pay tax on the funds it receives?
No, because the association, because the head of the association is the, it would be, in this case, the doctor, okay?
Right.
Who used to be a licensed doctor. He's the head. He has a bank account in his name. It comes in. He just files his Schedule C self-employment and pays taxes like he always did.
Okay, so all right. Okay, so in other words, it would be considered almost like an LLC as a pass-through.
Yes, it's like it's a pass-through.
Where they would do like a K-1 filing, a distribution statement, and whoever the money went to, they then owe the tax.
Pretty much.
Depending on their status and standing.
And when I checked out this stuff to see if it was legitimate or not before even talking to them about it, it was some guy in Texas done it for many, many years. And I talked to other groups that were doing it, and they've been doing it for 5, 6, 7 years. None of them are using the bypass taxes. They're all paying just the same tax they would have paid otherwise.
So in other words, the bottom line of it is if you go out here and use it like a business trust or use it like an LLC or any other entity that's set up to do business with the public, you're violating the rules of a PMA.
Well, you're violating the rules of the IRS. For example, the IRS took an interesting view, and I discussed this a little bit with the CID guy that called me a couple of times, that whole thing from the guy in Arizona, everything, put my name on documents without telling me. One of the things they talked about was the fact that they'll go ahead and recognize a trust, but they disregard the entity for the purpose of tax law. And then, because of, like, if you have real estate in the name of the trust, when you want to sell it, they tell the title company when they find these trusts, they don't do it until you find the real flesh and blood person behind the trust, and they need their number. And so if they don't give the number, they can't sell the property. And then they lien it and everything. And then the IRS will put a lien on that property against the trust. And then, of course, they'll say, well, you can't come after it. But guess what? Someone's got to come up to just tell them to sell when they're going after it, trying to lien it. So.
John has a friend named Tom Tilley. I don't know if you've ever heard that name or not.
Only from you. I've heard you mention the name.
Yeah. They put him in jail at age 83 for 3 counts of willful failure. But he had all these trusts, so they're now after everything in the trust. And he had millions of dollars in property. See, they don't ever bust up a trust. They just get people for operating it incorrectly and then call it an alter ego and then take what's there. But I've never seen them disassemble a trust. I've never seen them disassemble a corporation's soul.
The official view is they will just disregard the entity for tax purposes.
Right.
That's what they do.
And that's because the person is a U.S. citizen.
And they pass laws that even the title company has to figure out who the foreigner is, and they got to identify themselves. Otherwise, you have foreign interest controlling everything, too. And someone's got to be identified. Now, if a foreigner has a W-8 on file, they don't owe it. That's different, but you still got to identify. All these people who are saying, I believe in the trust. The trust is going to protect me. Well, if you believe in the document, then how come you're afraid to say who you are associated with that document?
Gary, you know the weird thing about this, and this is the weirdest part to me, how I don't see anyone other than, and what we did with Dom, I don't see anyone else doing this right.
In a way, I'm glad at this point.
I mean, seriously, I don't see anyone else doing it right. I've got recognition from other countries. I've done humanitarian aid. We're acting like a member of the family of nations. I'm not arguing about the U.S. I'm not complaining about the U.S.
You got the KOM supposedly, allegedly calling you and recognizing.
I still say that call was real in a sense that no one talks about one word that he mentioned, the one term, landless sovereignties. No one else would have mentioned that.
He understood that totally and completely, and he understood how he wanted to use it, be used, and no, they, I wish.
The reason I knew it was real was because it's not even a term that I talk about.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand it, and I talk, and I have, look, I've listed at least 9 case precedents for landless sovereignties.
Yeah.
I don't know if I ever told you that, but the first one is actually the United States of America, because they didn't have any land. The king owned all the land.
Correct. That's right.
Even the land grants said they were held in common suckage, which means the king didn't give up title. The king wrote a patent, and the definition of the word patent is the word license. A patent is a license. What they did in the Treaty of Paris when they said, I will now treat you as sovereigns. That is a sovereign grant of the land, sovereign title. What they did corporately was just a big corporate merger because the colonies were not getting along. And so to get them to a point where they had to operate in unison, they had to borrow $18 million in gold.
Right, right, right.
So they put them into debt.
Yep.
Whether they forced them into debt or whether it was a plot behind the scenes, I don't know. And it's as Arthur said a long time ago. He asked me one time, he said, do you know what the purpose of the debt is? And I was like, tell me. He said, to control the incompetent.
Well, that's a fair thing to do because if they're incompetent, they're dangerous, and so you have to control them.
Adams and Jefferson both realized that the Republic was over before they died.
Yep, you're right. They realized it was already going by the wayside.
Right. Well, the thing about it is Adams himself said you can destroy a nation state one of two ways, either by the sword or by debt. And I was like, congratulations, you did both.